The word ugly is frightening, at least for those who are convinced by one means or another that they are in fact ugly. It's a very frightening word. Perhaps the word unattractive would not be so destructive, but it seems when a girl believes she's unattractive, it's a very short step to the conviction that she's ugly. And from unattractive to ugly is the beginning of a downward spiral, which easily ends in total loss of self-esteem. Recently, with some other people, I filled out a questionnaire designed to help us discover what our real values are. And one of the questions had to do with the important, necessary qualities for people to have in establishing relationships. It was a multiple-choice question, which included such things as intelligence, physical appearance, and education. And no one in our group said that physical appearance was the most important thing. Perhaps we were dishonest, perhaps not. The first part of this program is about girls who are convinced that they are ugly. And for us to anxiously list important qualities other than physical appearance would be, at this point, a frank refusal to hear. In addition to the teenage girls interviewed, we hear from Lucy Commissar, who's active in the women's liberation movement in New York, and also Diane Wachowski reads some of her own poetry.
Sit there and you think about what's the matter with you, and you go through all these wonderful crying sessions and everything, that nobody likes you and you're hated, and then you try with the makeup and you see, now am I going to look more irresistible like this? But you normally give up. It's really depressing.
Oh yeah, I'd like to have dates. Oh sure, I'd like to have boys at my door every night and go out, but I don't have anybody.
Well, one time I got some advice from my girlfriend, and she said, Jan, you know, this is never going to last unless you get a little freer. So I went out and I put on this thing, okay, Jan, we're going to be free. So we went to a dance and we necked all night, and he never asked me out again. So I scrapped that tactic.
I'm more than what I look like. I don't feel I look like very much. But I hope I'm a really beautiful person on the inside.
To be born woman is to know, although we do not talk of it at school, that we must labor to be beautiful.
Certainly in high school, I wasn't very popular, mainly because I was overweight, and still am, and mainly because I was very shy, and so it really bothered me that I didn't have dates. It bothered me that I wasn't popular, but I didn't fight it. I just sort of went into myself, and there was a while there when I rarely even talked to anybody. I just sort of stayed in my room and read a lot, and, you know, it doesn't bother me so much now, you know, but then it really, really hurt, even though I didn't show it.
I kind of feel sorry for myself, because I'm so shy, I'm so dumb, not talking, being out, having fun like everybody else. Because I don't think I'm pretty. I think that all the guys laugh at me.
Well, I guess I was lucky in that I had an outside interest that I think overpowered everything. I just lived for it. I was a dancing teacher when I was in high school. And I tried so hard, and I did really well at it, I think. So that it came to, I would judge the days of the week by how long it was until Saturday when I would spend a whole day at this, or how long it was until Wednesday night when I had my 3-hour class. And really, school was just sort of secondary, and if I hadn't had this really overwhelming outside interest, I think then I would have had problems. But as it was, I had a built-in excuse. whenever these sock ups came up, I'd say, oh, sorry, I can't do it anyway. I have a rehearsal on Friday night or something. And no one would ever question it. And so for me, it worked out well, actually.
That was a bit harder for me because I have a twin sister. And we're not, you know, identical. She's sort of very petite, and she's sort of in style today. And she's quite cute, too. And what really bothered me was that she was going out all the time. She sort of kept throwing it up into my face, and it made me even worse. You know, in spite of my parents sort of trying to tell her to lay off, she wouldn't. So a lot of my problems stemmed right from her, and it kept on going. Well, I went off into my own world, and it mainly consisted of romance books, and I still have thousands of romance books, and I just read those all the time, and it got to the point where people weren't real anymore, and that's when my parents started getting worried about me, and but I snapped out of it. But still, even today, I don't go out, so I read a lot. That's my world, my reading and television, and my complete world outside of the university.
Okay, I lacked confidence. I really felt that I just wasn't going to make it in the social world looking the way I was. Or assuming that I didn't have a chance to do anything about it, I felt completely inadequate physically. And I knew that physical appearances were important in establishing relationships with anybody. Girls go out, you know, I like to stick with the good-looking girls. And boys like to go out with the good-looking girls, and I knew I wasn't one of them. What is more important to a person at that age in a social life? So what if your parents love you and you get along fantastic with your brother and you don't do bad in school? But that's not what it matters to you at that age. It's going out with boys and mixing and having all kinds of friends and having phone calls and whatnot, isn't it? And if you don't, and if you're not part of that, if you're not integrated, then you're alone and you're left out and you feel terribly inadequate and you suffer, and that's why. That's what it felt like. And I suffered because it probably was a multitude of reasons why I wasn't in with the group, in with the crowd. But I attributed it to solely to the fact that I wasn't pretty, and I wasn't pretty because I had a big nose. My nose was finally fixed, and all I could think of was that I'm going to come out of there, I'm going to be a new woman, I'm going to look just fabulous. I'll have everything at my fingertips because I had thought that beauty is what commands everything. Once you have beauty, you don't have a problem left. You know, as far as brains are concerned, you can fake it. And I just thought that the whole world was going to change, and I was just deliriously happy. I remember singing or something silly, waiting for those bandages to be taken off. All I could think of was that nose under that bandage is going to be fantastic. I'm going to be just, you know, great. And they took them off, and it wasn't.
I sternly accept this plain face and hate every moment of that sternness. I want to laugh at this ridiculous face of lemon rinds and vinegar cruets, of unpaved roads and dusty file cabinets, of the loneliness of Wall Street at night and the desert of school on a holiday. But I would have to laugh alone in a cold room, prefer the anger that at least for a moment gives me a proud profile.
I think that a lot of the ideas that we have about beauty and what a woman should do to look beautiful and be beautiful are a result of the fact that in earlier times she had really very little control over whether she was beautiful or not. And yet whether she was beautiful or not might determine, first of all, whether she would have children, whether she would get married, how wealthy her husband might be, or whether he'd be a lord or just a common worker. And if she didn't get married, she knew she was going to be relegated either to a nunnery or at least to a life of being dependent on the goodness of her family or of relatives or maybe even in the poorhouse because of the fact that she wasn't considered sufficiently attractive to attract a husband. I think that in our generation, we have come upon a time where it is accepted that women wear makeup and therefore that it is that any woman can be beautiful even if she wasn't there when God gave out looks, and therefore consequently she's supposed to do everything in the world to attract, to make herself look attractive and to be beautiful, which means buying all the products that Hollywood and New York cosmetic manufacturers have managed to create, and it means spending the time to determine what is the best for herself, what is going to make her look the most beautiful, and to put those on, and to go back into the dressing room afterwards and add to them again and what have you. The tremendous amount of money, energy, and time that this consumes is incredible. And as a result, it takes away from this woman the time, the energy, and the money to spend on other things which might be, in the long run, much more significant.
The ad says, buy our makeup and your skin will be just fantastic. And you buy the makeup and the skin isn't fantastic. You can try to use it and to achieve a certain result that they promise. And if it doesn't work, well, you try something else, or you just rationalize it. Everything is scientific. It's not a spiritual thing that it's going to transform you. You just realize it has so many properties, it can only do so much. But why you buy it is because you want to be beautiful, because they tell you that it will make you beautiful. And why do you want to be beautiful? Because also, in the same sense, these ads say it is important to be beautiful. Beautiful people do the great things. You see only the most beautiful looking girl, the most handsome looking, the best physique man romping on the beach in the car. And you know that, or you become conditioned to know that beauty is the key to happiness.
When I was a teenager, there was a magazine called Calling All Girls, which was sort of like a Girl Scout publication. You know, it was one of those things that said girls should help their mothers and be loyal and true, and that was what being a good girl was. And this was for teenage girls. At that time, there came onto the market for the first time a magazine called 17. And 17 was supposed to appeal to the same audience that this other publication had appealed to. Instead, it was really a sex magazine. I mean, what it literally did was a how-to magazine on not how to be a good daughter or how to be a good friend or how to be good in school, but rather, you know, how to dress properly, how to be made up properly, how to figure out what to say to boys and what have you. And there was one particular picture I'll never forget. It showed a bathtub, a very elegant marble-type bathtub. Next to the bathtub was a stool, and it had all these products on the stool. There was a razor and a toothbrush and soap and, you know, all kinds of bathroom-type products. And they each had a brand name next to it, and I thought to myself, if I could buy every one of those products, and they were mostly, you know, we'll say in the 75 cents to a $2.50 range a piece, it was like I'd then be beautiful. And I literally made up a list and went through and tried to buy all those products. I mean, and by brand name. And I was not, you know, a particularly stupid girl. I wasn't particularly unsophisticated. I lived in New York City, supposedly the most sophisticated city in the Western Hemisphere. And yet, I was brainwashed to such a degree that I went through this kind of a process.
Well, certainly, being the perfect type of girl mattered a lot to the kids, both the girls and the boys at school. And the fact that I wasn't that affected their attitudes towards me. My parents didn't really force me to too much except to be more outgoing and going to the dances. But, you know, that's all.
I think, though, that it's that when it comes to makeup, a woman realizes that if she does not wear the kind of makeup that the society at the present time says is the right kind of makeup, whether it's, and it's the same thing in clothing, if she's wearing short skirts when everybody else is wearing long skirts and vice versa, she is demonstrating an antisocial form of behavior. If she's young and a rebel and interested in women's liberation, she may say, well, this is just the statement I want to make. I want to show that I'm not being a part of this kind of hoodwinking and nonsense. If she's not, though, she may feel that this is not the way she wants to go, and consequently, she's caught in this dilemma of living in a sense of fraud, a very time-consuming fraud. And I think this is to any woman who really is interested in doing something with her life, one of the things that really gets to her more than anything else.
And I see the world change around me, only one thing never changes. Men remember, love, cherish beautiful women. As I've said, like April snow. Like silk that rustles in a fragrant chest. Like a machine dripping with oil and running smoothly. I am poo-pooed every time I say it. A woman of your intelligence, etc. Believing such a superficial thing. Only the foolish, the misguided, the men with no balls are the ones that don't really matter. Love a woman for her beauty, her physical self. But I know different.
Just say that when I look back on, say, my high school years, and that what I classify as when I had the most problems, all I can really remember about it is that I was very, very lonely and very, very unhappy. You know, I can't remember really distinct incidents. It was just sort of a general period of misery, for lack of a better word, you know, not being having self-pity or anything. I used to sort of say that I was sort of sensible, in quotes, and I shouldn't feel sad or I shouldn't feel sort of left out because I had a lot of other things, you know, I could have done. But when I look back, it's just a miserable period.
I think it might be something natural in the younger years, if you like, of a person's life. I think it's perhaps when a person becomes older, when a person has had the experience of developing friendships, love, relationships, marriage, whatever, and they realize that you can't live with a pretty face alone. You know, that there has to be something else. But because you don't go so deeply into these experiences when you're in your teens, you don't get involved to that extent, you're not developed that much yourself, I guess we relate on a very superficial level. But I can remember being rather promiscuous with boys when I was very young, thinking that, well, you know, he'll never stay with me unless I do this or do that, you know, and sort of doing it against my will. I can remember that. But only up to a point. I can just remember this, you know, with several boys when I was about 14 or 15. I started looking for other things in boys when I still felt, and I still do today, that many boys are attracted by your physical appearance. You know, I think that there are many men that never really do go beyond this. To them, this is a measure of success, a beautiful wife.
I think mainly I blame the kids for deliberately ostracizing someone who wasn't the same and for placing so much emphasis on, well, for lack of a better word, exteriors. Now, some kids aren't pretty, but somehow they manage to rise above that and become very popular. But if you're shy or if you're easily hurt or easily snubbed, then you don't have a chance. I see it's partly in your mind because you think that everybody is making fun of you secretly, even though they don't say anything. A lot of it is your own self being so afraid of being different or being ridiculed.
The only thing that I think is necessary is that families, and particularly, continue to encourage their children, you know, who may be, for some reason or other, going through, you know, a homely period of their life, perhaps because of acne or they're fat, you know. And I think these people must be encouraged to develop the many talents, you know, that they do have. Because if they're not, there's a good chance that these things will never be developed. A person will become so insecure and feel that they can just do nothing, that they'll sort of remain dormant, you know, for their whole life. And I've seen girls today, I think, who are not particularly attractive, and yet they don't seem to give off this sense of insecurity because of the great family life they've had. When you look at their family, the parents who encourage them to do this or to do that, you know, and as a result, they themselves feel very good about themselves. But when we come to consider people's feelings, how terrible it is to be rejected, and how this thwarts, you know, the potential that exists in every person. I mean, we talk about great ideals such as peace and love. How can we ever expect these to be realized if the potential in every person isn't allowed to be developed? We're denying the possibility of some of these ideals if we continue to encourage, you know, such things as physical appearance, all to the detriment of the other qualities that people have.
Always I've envied the rich, the beautiful, the talented, the go-getters of the world. I've watched myself remain alone, isolated, a fish that swam through the net because I was too small, but remained alone in deep waters because the others were caught, taken away. It is so painful for me to think now, to talk about this. I want to go to sleep and never wake up. The only warmth I ever feel are wool covers on a bed. But self-pity could trail us all, drag us around on the bottom of shoes like squashed snails, so that we might never fight. And it is anger I want now, fury to direct at my face and its author, to tell it how much I hate what it's done to me, to contemptuously, sternly, brutally even, make it live with itself, look at itself every day, and remind itself that reality is learning to live with what you're born with.
Learning to live with what you're born with. These comments bring to mind the movie The Rainmaker. Now, if you saw it, you'll remember Burt Lancaster as the Rainmaker was thought to be a fraud. He could not pull off the miracle of producing rain to end a crop-killing drought. But he did manage what seemed almost an even more unlikely miracle. The farm girl, who had been so sure of her unattractiveness, slowly became convinced of her own self-worth, and gradually her attractiveness and even beauty. And it was out of the ecstasy of that miraculous moment at the end that the rainstorm, which did in fact happen, seemed to be an anticlimax. Considering what we've heard, such miracles do not easily happen.